James Hahn II.
And I'm Mark LaCour.
And you're listening to This Week in Oil and Gas. This is the podcast for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Episode four. Welcome in, Mr. LaCour.
Thank you very much, and happy anniversary. It's our fourth episode.
All right, well, let's leave that to the side for now. We can talk about that offline. But we've got a heck of a lot of things to cover, and we're starting off with a story that, and by the way, if this is your first time listening, thank you for listening. For everybody that has tuned in and who has subscribed on iTunes, which is now available on iTunes, so thanks to everybody. You know, we do this every Friday. As long as I shut my mouth long enough, we finish it in 20 minutes. So let's go. Petronas to utilize U.S. $5 billion bond issue for CapEx MA deals. Did you not call this last week, Mr. LaCour?
Yeah, we did call this last week. It's Petrobras raised a round of funding, and we forecasted they were going to use it for mergers and acquisition deals, which is exactly what they're doing.
Where are they doing it?
So this is Petrobras is actually Malaysia's nationalized oil company. They're NOC. And so they raised this funding in Malaysia, but there's, of course, a lot of people outside of Malaysia bought into this to raise this amount of cash. Now, where they're actually doing M&A activity, nobody's going to know, because then it'll elevate the price and they won't get as good a deal. We suspect that there's going to be some hard looks into the China market. You know, what can they acquire to help them bring their products to the China market more effectively or quicker? And we also suspect that they're going to buy, in this down upstream economy, some good prospect properties.
Got it. And so Petronas is on the move. Also, Scottish oil and gas firm is doing some things in East Africa. And I always like to put a spotlight on Africa, because I think it is an underappreciated asset in the oil field, believe it or not, because I think, maybe only for Americans that could be true, but broadening our scope a little bit, talk about this deal.
Yeah, so that Mozambique area, Africa, has been hot. Anadarko has been out there for years kicking butt. So is Eni and Shell, BG Group, Petrobras, so on and so on. And so what's happened, this Scottish country itself has a very robust oil and gas training program that's supported by the national government. What's happened in this, the country of Scotland has taken this chance to go to this part of Africa and bring their training robustness in to help partner and grow the expertise of the African country. So this is a good deal. You know, of course, money's going to be made here as well, but it's nice to see the global oil and gas industry come in and help train people to do things safely and environmentally responsibly.
That's nice. So they're going to build the infrastructure, educate the people, create jobs, all the things that we never get credit for. But, you know, such is life. Private equity and U.S. shale playing the long game. This is a bit of an analytical article, and I didn't have a chance to dig in it as much as I would like to, but I appreciate any time anyone talks about the long game, because I don't think we do it enough in the oil field. So what's going on here?
Yeah, so this is, we've talked about this a bit in the past. This is basically the smart people, the good people, the people that understand the industry, realizing that there's a lot of devalued assets in the oil and gas industry, especially in upstream and service in North America, and figuring out when is the time to swoop in and buy it, right? So the strategy, of course, is to wait till the price hits rock bottom, buy it cheap, sit on it for a year, exit at a higher dollar, and that's what's going on. And you know, naturally, we have some smaller players or some more inexperienced players there on the other side of that wall that actually built their financial models at, you know, $60, $70, $80 a barrel, and right now they're in trouble.
Right. And what are some of the takeaways? I mean, this is a 4-page article.
Yeah. So some of the takeaways is Blackstone's doing pretty decent, which everybody can figure they would. Some of the big wheels like Apollo, Global Management, Carlyle are doing very good. And then some of the smaller people, some of the baits got stuck, right? And so they're hurting. So this is just going to be a shift of assets from the people that know how to build a good financial model in a down oil economy from those that didn't.
You know, I am just now realizing on page 4 that this is my boy. I know this is the oilaholic. So if you go out there and follow him on Twitter, because I hit page 4 at the _oilaholic OILHOLIC. I've been connected to him for, I want to say, a couple of years now. So good to see him out on Forbes, because he's been churning out some really good content for a long time. All right, moving on. What I'm buying during the big oil sale? What would a show like this be without a Seeking Alpha story? So let's dig in.
Yeah, this is Dirk Leach talking about what his picks are right now at this point in history, which is March 2015. I agree with him mostly. A couple of things I disagree. He's staying away from the large super majors. We actually did very well at the end of last year investing in the large super majors when it was devalued, because we knew it would come back, and they've already come back. But he goes through company by company and why he thinks you should invest in the stock in these companies. And I think for the most part, he's pretty spot on.
So, other than the majors issue, what are some of the things? I see some credit rating stuff here, and some interesting conclusions. What are some of the other takeaways from here?
Yeah, at a high level, it's stuff that we talked about last week. Look at midstream. Look at the pipeline companies. You still got to move this stuff around, regardless if it's $10 a barrel, $100 a barrel. So he's favoring a lot of good midstream companies, and then companies that service that segment of the industry. So, I like I said, don't use my advice to buy stock, but I think this guy's probably pretty spot on.
Yeah, and shout out to the midstream folks that are listening. I'm expanding my wings per your advice, Mr. Mark LaCour, because I am known as such a upstream E&P guy, but I'm definitely having a lot of fun learning about the midstream. And we had a pretty good sales conversation with a midstream / downstream company this morning. So we talked about stocks. The Motley Fool is always funny to me, because they're kind of like the BuzzFeed of this industry. Right. They've always got these kind of, catchy, buzzy type of headlines and everything. But if you dig in, there's usually something there. So this oil stocks get ready for merger mania. Whether or not that's a good headline for this industry, we can debate those. But I think that there's a heck of a lot going on here. So talk us through it.
Yeah, so if you actually read this article, you kind of wonder if this guy that penned this didn't listen to our show last week and use some of our information here. He literally talks about why would Exxon raise another $10 billion in financing, and maybe they're going to buy BP, which we've been talking about since last year.
Yes.
He's talking about the strength of Chevron financially, which we talked about last show, where Chevron's out there buying assets because they have a bunch of cash right now and know the money's going to come back. And then he's talking about some of the people that in the Shell plays that are doing well. People like EOG Resources, Devon Energy, who know what they're doing. They've been doing this for a long time, so they did not get over-leveraged in the Shell play. This is kind of a Hollywood-esque stock article, but there's some good information in here. But, if you read it thoroughly and then go back and listen to our last show, you would swear this guy is writing stuff off of what we're talking about.
Well, I'm going to tweet him. I'm going to call him out. Shots fired. We can't have that. Oh, my goodness. Earlier, this was not a subscribable article. Now it is. Banks struggle to unload oil loans. I'm just going to throw that in the show notes because we've probably talked enough about that ad nauseum. So we can skip over that one, because apparently they want you to subscribe to The Wall Street Journal. And who's going to do that? No need to pay the people who are generating this content. But why Goldman is wrong about commodity prices. Now, a little backstory on me. I come from Michigan. I like to say that Quicken Loans was my first sort of university, if you will, in business. I learned a lot working for Dan Gilbert and the guys up there. And one of the biggest things I learned is that he was completely wrong about whether or not there was a bubble on housing prices in America and what that was going to do, because he was on the squawk box on a daily basis and so forth, and we would all gather around the TV, and of course Goldman was all AAA grades. And so, knowing my history, knowing that I came from mortgages into the oil business, I like any time I hear people calling out Goldman and why they're wrong about something, because they sure got that one wrong. So what's this guy saying here?
So basically, Goldman's saying that all commodities are going to stay very cheap, and they're saying oils go down to $30 a barrel. I disagree. I think we've hit rock bottom. Now, we may still see some regional prices like West Texas Intermediary go up, because production's still going up on that. But if you look at Brent, I think we've hit rock bottom. And so when you look at oil as a commodity, I don't think it's going to get any lower than it is now. I think it will start creeping up. And we talked about this last year. We think by mid-2016, we'll be back up to $80 a barrel. So, you know, I disagree with Goldman as well on this. I think they're missing a couple of key things here.
$30 a barrel. I can't help but think, but wonder what other investments they're trying to scare people into buying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I you know, it looks that way to me too.
Yeah, so walk us through this a little bit more. I want to dig deeper because we got some time. We're going through these things quickly, and folks, we're figuring this out week after week. And we're learning as we go. We're always trying to keep it at 20 minutes, but we don't want to go too fast. So that said, you know, this guy, I'm just kind of skimming the article. Brent bottomed out at 46, rallied around 30%, And I was just with you earlier this week at the American Petroleum Institute Houston chapter meeting, and you're very confident about that 2016 number. Where does that confidence come from?
The confidence comes from the fact that we know this industry. I'm not quite sure who Goldman has working on the oil and gas patch, but and we talked about this last year, November of 2014, we talked about this. In fact, May of 2014, we predicted these low crude prices for the glut on the market. But basically, OPEC can only keep production at the current level and low prices for X amount of time because they are dipping into their savings account to keep their social programs funded while this price of oil is so low. And they can only do that X amount of time. Just like you, if you had to start living off your savings account, you can't do it forever. So that we may get the dates wrong, but we're pretty confident. I mean, we know it's going back up, and we're pretty confident we have the dates pretty close as well. So we'll see what you know, time will say whether Goldman's right or whether we're right.
What are some of the other things they dig into here? I see nickel, gold, zinc.
Yeah, they're talking about all commodities. And I'm not going to go down the commodities route because I'm not in the commodities business. I'm in the oil business. So whether they're right about the rest of the commodities going up or down, I don't know.
Well, if the $30 a barrel is any indication, I don't know. I have a question mark. That has nothing to do with you and your research, though, Mark. That's me and my personal opinion. Disclaimer. Francis Total presses Cyprus oil gas search officials. So what's Total up to?
So Total is one of the five super majors in the world. They do everything. And Total is making some smart decisions here, right? If they can find a recoverable amount of gas in Cyprus, they can make Cyprus a hub and start feeding Israel and the Lebanese countries gas, which they desperately need. If they can't find recoverable gas, then this project's probably not going to go anywhere.
So at this point, it's just an exploration thing.
Yep, they're out there. They've partnered with Cyprus government, and they're out there doing their E&P stuff, which they're very good at. All their geomodeling, geophysics, all that sort of stuff, and they will know ahead of time whether it's worth their money to invest and try to recover gas here.
And how's Noble involved in this?
Noble made the first find in one of the fields offshore Cyprus. So Noble has access to gas. Now, whether it's enough to be economically recoverable and feasible, we don't know that yet.
Got it. All right. Wrapping things up on something that you and I have talked about online and offline several times. There is a strong demand for oil and gas recruits. And, you know, take it with a grain of salt. This is actually a recruiter saying this. So there's that part of it. However, this is something that I really knew nothing about until you started talking to me about it. I mean, I knew about, the great crew change and that was coming and things like that. But you've always told me, no, this is happening now. This is a problem now. And so just talk to us about that.
Yeah, there is a shortage of labor in the oil and gas industry. We at Modal Point do a survey every year and we ask the same or as close as we can, the same 900 oil and gas business leaders globally. What are you worried about when you look at your business out the next 5 years? And every year, talent comes back as number one. It came back number one in 2014, and we suspect it'll come back number one in 2015. And it's a shortage of everything from professional services like engineers, project managers, chemists, mathematicians, scientists, to welders, pipe fitters, machinists. It's crazy. And the lack of talent is actually a business driver right now. You're seeing the refineries and the ethylene crackers and all the downstream part of the business struggle They have money, they have projects they want to complete, but there's literally not enough people to do the work. So they have to figure out how to get what critically they need done. I mean, it's nuts. And even in upstream right now, even this depressed oil economy, everybody's still hiring petroleum engineers because they're in such short supply. So lack of talent is a major business driver in this industry. It will continue to be a major business driver for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and so that would be why you're out there teaching STEMs on Fridays, right?
Absolutely. I'm in local high schools. I volunteer my time partnering with the Society of Petroleum Engineers to teach STEMs, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics, in my local high school. And at the same time, I'm talking to these students about the truth about the oil and gas industry, how great a place it is to work. We're literally recruiting at the high school level now. That's how desperate we are for talent.
Personally, just as someone who came, you know, from Michigan, my stock joke is that I grew up knowing nothing about oil except that you had to change it every 3,000 miles. And then coming here and really, the way I explain it to people is I just kind of stumbled into the best industry on earth. And I was talking to a guy earlier today. The thing that I love most about working in this industry is that you can literally change the world. Literally. The scale is so much fun. That's I don't know. That's what I get out of it.
No, absolutely. And change the world for the better.
Right.
Let's make it very clear here. The oil and gas industry brings profitability, economic stability, jobs, security, safety to the world. It's a great industry to work for.
Yeah, and the context of the conversation that I was having earlier as well was about all of these plants and all of these different basically industries and so forth up in the Colorado area that are now switching more and more to natural gas as their chosen fuel so they can avoid all the thermal inversions and all of the smog and everything that comes along with burning coal. So you really get both sides of the feel good story here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the U.S. as a whole is switching to natural gas as fuel for electrical generating plants. You automatically, just by making that switch without buying any more equipment, just by making the switch of fuel, you've dropped air pollution by 100%.
It's awesome. It's awesome. All right. So those are our links for today. We talked about adding on and wanting to because we are stealing this format. I'll be honest. Mark knows that already. But all y'all who are listening, if you want to hear an awesome podcast, it's called Marketing Over Coffee. And basically, I've been huge fans of John Wall and Chris Penn for a long time. And so go check that out. And they talk events, trade shows, things are coming up. So we're adding that here. And so what do we got coming up on the front here, Mark?
So we have a bunch of stuff coming up. In fact, James, maybe we'll throw a link up so people can sign up for our newsletter. But a couple of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about breakfast. We have the spring oil and gas season rapidly approaching, and they have two major breakfasts that are coming up, which are worth anybody attending that has an interest in oil and gas. On a Thursday, March 26th, we have the Decision Strategy Oilfield Breakfast Forum. I unfortunately have to travel for business and I won't make it, but if I could have made it, I would have. And these are like heavy hitter major executives in the oil and gas industry in a panel type of discussion. And they do something different. They have what they call coffee pods. So every place that there's a coffee pot set up, you'll have an expert. So an expert on commodities, an expert on crude price, an expert on completions, leading a discussion wherever you want to take it. So this is a chance for you to learn a lot about the industry and also network with real oil and gas business leaders. And then on Friday,
I might have to go down there with my microphone and do an impromptu oil and gas digital marketing podcast with the experts.
Okay, I can get that set up for you.
Let's do it.
All right, and then the next one I want to talk about is a Houston Energy Breakfast. This one's a little bit out there. It's Friday, April 17th, and this Energy Breakfast is going to be a major oil and gas executive event. Unless you're like a director or above in the oil and gas industry, you're not even on the invite list. The nice thing is it's focused not just on oil and gas, but on energy. So you'll have energy, power generation, energy distribution, oil and gas, LNG, ethylene, plastics, everybody will be there. And it's a great chance for people to network within this world. And actually, they have some very heavy hitters. They have like one of the presidents of Chevron's there. The CEO of CenterPoint Energy is going to be there, and it's an exclusive insider event. I'll make sure I get you the links, James, so you can stick them up in the show notes.
All right, that's cool, and we'll make sure to keep a lookout for any national, international shows coming up that we can talk about on future episodes. For now, any closing remarks, Mark?
Do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
All right, go find some grease, guys.